Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, Paul. I really needed this show today for my personal sanity. As you know, I am hooked on the idea of awe and wonder. Today, Terry Hershey and I talk about finding awe in the ordinary. Typically, the idea of awe seems to be often restricted to some sort of event like travel or museums. But in these days of COVID, travel and museums are no longer available. Yet, I'm thinking for the keen of mind, awareness of awe in the ordinary everyday aspects of life can be easily discovered. I really enjoyed this conversation with Terry. He truly gets awe in the ordinary. It was Einstein that said, "He who can no longer pause to wonder and stand rapt in awe is as good as dead. His eyes are closed." Wouldn't it be glorious if awe became an everyday experience? It is my hope, truly, that this show leads you there. I hope you enjoyed this conversation with Terry as much as I did. So let's get on with the show. Yo, Hirsch, what's up, man?
Charles, good to talk to you.
It's good to talk to you. How's everything up in the Pacific Northwest?
The weather forecast is rainy and cloudy and gray, which is very rare.
Yeah, very rare.
I put in the other day, we had a gorgeous day with just one of those blue skies. You can't name the blue, and the sun was out. And, I mean, it's not warm. It's still in the 40s, but it was a gorgeous day. And I put that I had to Google what that was, and I found out it was called sunshine. But,
I remember when I was in Portland for 3 years, and there was a time, there was a year there that it rained 179 days of the year. That did not include the additional 100 days of dark and no sun. So you only had like a third of the year in sun, and no wonder everybody was ecstatic with sun. But it creates such beauty. You know, the trade-off is, I think, you know, probably in your case, the trade-off is well worth it, is it not?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's my favorite thing is to try to name colors, and the colors are blue here.
That's funny. I was just writing poetry last night, just a little bit. I wasn't really, it was just a little tiny thing. And I wrote green, and I looked for synonyms of green because it was not the right word.
Right.
And I found emerald, and I just found that I loved emerald. Words mean so much. So, Terry, let me tell you about today. I personally need today's show. I need to get out. I need to get my mind out of our current times of what our cultural dis-ease and disorder, and once again, remind myself simple beauty of awe and wonder in life itself, even in our quarantine life. Now, this morning, I knew what my topic was going to be, and I knew you were going to be the guest, but I read your blog this morning. Do you still call that Sabbath Moment, or do you call that a blog?
Yeah. I mean, it's something that goes out every day. So, yeah, technically it's a blog, but the title is Sabbath Moment.
Okay, but it's different than your longer version on Mondays.
This one's called A Daily Dose. Literally, I think of it as a vitamin for our emotional well-being. Because, to your point, it's a reminder about the stuff we forget when we get derailed by distraction and hurry. We lose track of our grounding, our bearing.
So true, so true. I didn't think I could read them daily, and I've been reading them daily. So kudos there, my friend.
Thank you.
So this morning, your thesis seemed to be about embracing the ordinary. There was a lot of talk about embracing the ordinary. And while we both agreed there is such simple awe and wonder in the ordinary, we often miss it because we are too busy doing other things, too busy heading our direction, too busy trying to get there, And one other thing I would like to add, because I noticed it today when I was driving, instead of paying attention to what's going around me, the buildings that are passing me and the hills and the trees, I'm a thinkaholic. So my brain is just, I'm driving by robot, like I'm the robot. In that process, so much is missed. What do you think?
Yes, 100%. The first thing is, because people say, okay, all right, I'll start looking for awe and wonder in the ordinary, et cetera. But they still see it as an assignment. So the first thing we have to do is we have to shift the paradigm here. As soon as I see it as an assignment, then I give myself shit and grief the fact I can't see it. But the paradigm shift is Abram Heschel, as a rabbi, said, we teach our children how to weigh and measure. We don't teach them awe and wonder. So one of the reasons I'm given over to so much mental consternation is because my paradigm is weighing and measuring. What did I get done today? What do I need to accomplish today? What do we need to report that's successful today? In other words, I've already decided what my paradigm is. What would happen if I was asked different questions at the end of the day? Not what did you get done, but what did you see that made you come alive? That did your heart good? That made you glad? Made you smile real big? That made you glad you're in the present moment? That made you not look at your watch? Any of those things.
Yeah, you know, that's a great idea because, you know, I know several people that like to write journals in the evenings on sort of gratitude lists of journals. I know it works for people and I applaud them. It's just not in my nature. But your question really does strike me. What did I do today or what did I experience today that gave me this sense of just tiny things? Like I get them from buildings and I get them from planters and I get them from relationships. And I had a wonderful lunch with a guy today and it was so replenishing. I walked away with a sense of wonder that we could connect at this level and the appreciation of it. So I moved from all of the tactics and all the details that we had to cover and I moved into love for this man and concern for his situation because he's got an illness that he's working through right now. And there it was right there, and by grace, I was able to catch it. I was able not to miss that opportunity.
Absolutely. And the thing about reliving that, too, at the end of the day, what did you today that allowed you to be present, is that it's just making space for that sense of gratitude again. And that's an extraordinary thing. That's a great gift. Because what you're doing is you're affirming the things that give you value and therefore ground you.
Without, like you said, without it being a checklist of to do things that make me feel guilty and make me feel overly structured, that I'm more.
Yeah,
important.
Because then you get those things where I have no problem with the gratitude journal. It's a good thing to start with. What are you grateful for today? But sometimes we get, when it becomes a kind of, what are you grateful for? I've been in retreats. What are you grateful for? And someone says that. And the next person's like, oh, my God, that's so good. You think that was good. Wait till you hear what I'm grateful for. You won't believe this shit. Then it's a contest. It's like, who's the most grateful? And then we kind of miss the point.
Isn't that most true in so many conversations? That you'll have a conversation and somebody will tell you about just this wonderful thing that happened to you and you say, yeah, that's great. Wait till you hear what mine was.
Yeah.
Because I really agree with your idea of not keeping scorecards. And the idea of keeping scorecards will keep you far away from anything of awe.
100%. So the paradigm shift is that. In other words, where do I set that down? And once I start to set the scorecard down, you all of a sudden become aware of things in your daily routine that you wouldn't have known, that you wouldn't have otherwise stopped to see.
But, it doesn't happen accidentally. You have to make a conscious choice to try to do this. If you don't, you just fall into the same paradigm.
Yeah. In other words, you can't be a victim of either gratitude or wonder. You can't be a victim of it. You have to be a participant.
Ah, well said, Hirsch. Well said. If it becomes a guilt-ridden list, then you're a victim. But
yeah, or the thing that I have to see, look, I finally accomplished it at the end of the day, kind of thing. You and I are very familiar with that in terms of the way many Christian churches teach people about Christianity, that the paradigm is that way.
Yeah, and ergo, I fall into my new tradition of mystery.
Absolutely. Mystery in and of itself, you don't have to solve the puzzle. Therefore, you're now free to simply be in the puzzle. That's called being in the present moment.
Yeah, not only do you not have to solve the puzzle, if you try to solve the puzzle, it just eliminates anything you were doing.
Yeah.
That was positive. Do you think all of this about embracing the wonder of the ordinary, what does paying attention how does that impact that question or that effort?
Paying attention?
Paying attention to your day, paying fully attention to what's going on around you rather than full attention to the ego, to the self.
Well, the irony is when the ego and the self is you're not really paying attention to that. You're being driven by something. Paying attention is literally a pause button. You know, I am here, it's now. Paying attention is simply, I don't need to tell you exactly what I see other than I'm here. That's the mystery part, you know. I have no idea what color that is I'm looking at or what kind of moon is rising over there. I don't know any of those specific things for paying attention. But I know is that I'm here right now, fully present. And it makes my heart glad, and the world is extraordinary. I mean, paying attention, that's paying attention. The little boy said to his mama, "Mama, mama, listen to me, but this time with your eyes." So paying attention is simply putting yourself in a place. What happens out of that, I mean, this is not, you're not going to be scored for it or graded for it. He wasn't asking his mom to be graded for something after that. He just said, be here. That's all he was saying. Is just be here.
But be all here.
Yeah, be here. In other words, if your phone is with you, you're looking somewhere, you're not here. That's why one of the weirdest things about modern life, and we've had it in all of our businesses, is something called multitasking. That's dumbass.
I am incapable of it. I really can't do it. I was talking to a person yesterday, I believe it was yesterday, it was Tuesday, talking to my coach and just said, I do not have the bandwidth for multitasking. I have the capacity to go deep, but I can't go wide because if it has to go wide, I'm just lost in a plethora of confusion. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it's a good gift to have.
I keep coming back to this. Let me quit using the word choice, but we have to make a decision to do that. If we are not finding awe and wonder in our life, then we're letting the tyranny of culture and the news and the downsides and the troubles that are going on in the family, the troubles that are going on in the office, they consume all of our attention, and we don't have the attention to look at the beautiful things on the way home and to drop that in.
Well, it's not just the attention about that, because, you know, some of those things are actually, in other words, they may be sort of real circumstances in our life and world, but they don't necessarily determine our value and what we're drawing from to respond to or take care of. You know Joshua Tree National Park, right?
Of course.
Yeah, yeah. So when I used to live down there, Zach was real young then, we'd take him up to Joshua Tree, right? They give you a guide, you know, when you pay to go in there. Things to do, things to see. And they give one for kids. Are you ready for what the kid one said? First thing, find an oasis, in silence, spend 10 minutes there. This is for children. Ask yourself these questions. What did I hear? What did I see? What did I notice that surprised me?
That was for children, and the adults
awesome.
Was a list of tasks.
Exactly. Now, that's awesome. You asked about paying attention. There it is.
I love that.
The paradigm shift of the questions you ask. It never asked, how many miles does it take to get through? It never asked, What's the shortest route? It never asks when I get from here to here. It never asks you those things. Not to mention, that doesn't mean you don't have to get there. Mama, mama, listen, but this time with your eyes and your ears and your nose and all the other senses we have.
As you're talking, it reminds me of an Albert Einstein quote. You know who sees beauty in the universe as much as anybody are mathematicians and are physicists, because they see the complexity of the universe. When they truly see the complexity come together, like Einstein and Niels Bohr and the guy that I'm following right now, Frank Wilczek, they just see beauty in the universe, unlike the rest of us, because in their genius state, they see a completion that we don't see. And Einstein wrote this: he who can no longer pause to wonder and stand amazed in awe is as good as dead. His eyes are closed. Mm-hmm. Isn't that what we're talking about here?
Well, yeah, 100%. And the thing is, it's just and the wonderful thing about that is, for people who have been sort of blinded or their eyes have been covered, see, it's not like an assignment now to get past that. It's already within you. You know, this is no different than the gospel thing about Jesus and the light. There's a bushel over it.
Yes, and we've talked about that we do have, if Jesus says we do have a light, and when there's a bushel over it, that means we do have a light.
The light's there.
It's there. So, it's inherent.
Yeah. And yes. So that's what the quote is. Yeah, I'm just as good as dead, but the light's still there. In other words, I've just let the bushel be my identity rather than the light.
Well stated. Well stated. I want to get into the difficulty. I wrote one of my very first blogs, gosh, you know, I think it was like 2015 or something, maybe even 14, I'm not sure, but was how Italy nearly ruined my life. And the idea was, I found in just walking some of the main streets of Italy, like in Rome, Florence, Venice, you're walking through a museum. You know, everything is ancient. Everything is absolutely magnificently gorgeous. And so you're caught up, as Einstein said, amazed or rapt in awe. And then the art, and then the pace of life, and the food, and then namely, you have never had coffee until you have had coffee in Italy. And I've taken Italian coffee and tried to make it here, and it just does not work. And it is like a whole different drink than it is here. And it's just, you sit there and you savor the coffee. You cannot help. You can't just drink it and go, oh, this is coffee. You drink it and go, oh, my goodness, what is this? I found in travel that it was easy for me to find awe and wonder in travel, and less easy for me to find it at home. And then I found places to discover it at home, going to film, going to concerts, lots of art museums, relationships with people, and finding either highly intelligent or highly weird people and striking up conversations with them. Most of that has been taken away in COVID. I'm curious how we find beauty and awe in COVID. And let me lead with an illustration, and then we'll take a break. I'm doing some reading in Meister Eckhart right now, and Eckhart is a 14th century mystic, philosopher, theologian, and, you know, one of the most quoted men in this tradition. And he tells a story. Now, he tells a story of a European man who came upon 100 marks. Now, I have no idea what 100 marks is, but evidently from the context, it was a lot of money. So I'll put it in our terms, and maybe I'm going to expand the amount of money, but Eckhart tells the story of a man who came upon $10,000. He quickly loses $40,000, and then all he can do is fret over the loss. Instead, Eckhart suggests, the man should simply focus on the $60,000 he did have, and he would be much better off. Too often, we put the focus on what we don't have than what we do have. And the story of dealing with loss and distress and suffering, when in times of loss, Eckhart says that we should consider the good things that remain, even if they're unrealized. And this seems to be especially true in this time of COVID, that you can't get out like you used to. And yet, awe and wonder exist. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I have lots of thoughts. Before the break or after the break?
Why don't we do it after the break? What do you think, Paul? Yeah, we'll do it after the break. Hi, this is Charlie Hedges, and you're listening to The Next Chapter with Charlie, and I'm here with my good friend Terry Hershey. We are talking about discovering wonder and awe, rediscovering wonder and awe in our life, especially in a time when we have more confined lives, and we don't get to see it out in nature as much, or in museums, or in films, or in interrelationships with people. And so we're now turning the conversation over to where do we find this wonderful gift of awe and wonder, because we're so inundated with all of the crap that is going on, and beauty and wonder and awe changes our very perspective of life. And I told a story of Meister Eckhart, and Terry has some comments on that.
But that was before the break, Charlie. I've already forgotten it, but I'm sure it was a really good story.
I forgot who I was talking to. I was talking to myself. You know, I have it written down. You don't.
So I looked this up because I thought of an encounter I had with somebody.
Tell me about that encounter.
This is interesting. This is a letter I wrote to you 25 years ago.
Holy
cow. No, more than that. More than that.
The ones you threatened to publish that I won't let you publish till I die.
The reason I found it is because it's in one of my books. But I quoted Abram Heschel about don't teach children how to awe and wonder. We teach them how to weigh and measure, right?
Right.
So it's your Meister Eckhart thing. How do you see the sacred and the ordinary? How do you see the gifted rather than the, quote, loss or what we're missing? And so I'll read this to you. And so changing my question to what did I savor today rather than what did I lose today?
Perfect.
Some time back, my friend had the courage to tell me this is that his life was in a decision-making brink mode. And he held himself back, not thinking he would be allowed into a life or world of abundance and permission and joy and grace. He didn't ask for my advice, and I didn't have any anyway. But I wanted to write to him. This is back in the day when you and I wrote to each other. Here's what I wrote. I wrote this. I was thinking about your comments about being fragile or vulnerable. We talked about that a lot. Thinking that I didn't know what to say to you. Sipping my Dow's port while watching Monday Night Football. Remembering the times in my life when I had felt on the edge or in some way susceptible to shattering. Both shattered or shattering someone. Anyone around me, and trying to remember what triggered those times, and I came up with zero. But if all else fails, I'd be more than happy to pour you a glass of port and offer you a chair on the back deck to watch the sunset over the Puget Sound and hope for a little luck that maybe we'll see a bald eagle float by and tell you that I don't know much, my friend, but that sure is a damn fine eagle, isn't it? Who knows? Before the light gives way completely, we could wander over to the garden and take a hit of fragrance from the rose Souvenir de la Malmaison and marvel at the different ways the universe lets us get intoxicated, loitering in the moment, knowing full well that this drunkenness, like any other, comes with a price. The bittersweet reality that it can never quite fill the pit in our soul, even though it comes close. Or we can stay on the deck and crank up the music and let Mr. Clapton fill the dark and empty spaces, swap stories as good friends, and hope that the angels are taking notes on recommendations for ways to make eternity tolerable.
Holy cow, you ought to write a book, Terry. That was really well written. That was, and it was so right on the mark. It was so right on the mark that there are not necessarily answers, but there are approaches.
So that's the way of answering the question, is that in other words, people are going to get their pen down to, you know, I get my pen out because I, okay, good. How do I shift gears here? See, that's the point. What did you see today that did your heart glad? What did you see today that made you smile a little bit? What did you see today that lifted your spirits? What did you see today that made this day a gift?
You repeated something earlier similar to that, and I just think it's such a grand journal question that it would be, and instead of rehearsing what I did today, you know, say review your day and take an, there's a whole checklist thing. Take an inventory of your life. Like, gosh, that's what I want to do, is take an inventory of my day. It's, you know, it's going to suck. But if I remind myself that there was joy and there was some bit of awe and some bit of wonder and some bit of beauty and some bit of love, even as small as it may it be Eric Clapton or the smelling of a rose, it can make the day, it can change the day.
And it's in our spirit. I mean, you go back, I mean, think about all the great stories about children, you know. You'd appreciate this because, you know, the kids are out, little tiny kids, we're talking 3-4-year-olds, they're out with, you know, sticks and rocks playing baseball of sorts, but the adults go out and tell them, no, you're not playing the game right, and they try to teach them the rules for the game they're playing.
You know how many times when I was coaching Little League baseball and club baseball for kids, you know, 8 to 10 years old, and how many times the umpire said, I wonder how much better this would be if they fired us and they fired you and they just let the kids play baseball.
Yeah.
And I really resonated with what he had to say. I thought that was so true, because we make it, and especially when we make it so emotionally damaging on kids.
The competition part of it is a different shift. It's a whole different thing. But the game part of it, when my son was little, he played golf with me. He actually liked it because he had fun playing. Once it became a competitive thing later on in his teenage years, it wasn't as fun for him, but now, I mean, back then it was just a blast, but we'd go play on the little course on Vashon. Near some of the holes, there's, in the summertime, there's big blackberry things growing all along the hole. So when they were ripe, Zach would actually, before he'd go hit a shot, he'd go over and pick blackberries and eat them. And then the other people like, what's wrong with your kid?
He really caught it. All his, you know, it seems like all his life he caught it, didn't he? I mean,
it was so fascinating to me. What's wrong with your kid? In other words,
how come he's not lining up the shot? And
exactly, how come he's not over there? Yeah,
worried about where he's going to hit. I'm just going to go out there and swing it, and wherever it lands, I'll deal with it.
I'll go there, and maybe blackberries over there too.
You know what I want to do is I would like to just brainstorm. I know you don't like to be, I know you have a real disdain for setting objectives or setting, we need to, here are certain things to do. What I would like to do is, in our time of COVID, in our time of restricted movement, what are opportunities that you and I have found? I'd like to just share them back and forth. Opportunities that you and I have found that we can, in our personal home environments, that we can find beauty, wonder, and awe in the everydayness, ordinariness, and sometimes super ordinariness. Sometimes there are days like last, I'll just start. Last night I was writing on this podcast because I knew I was busy today and I was busy yesterday, so I was writing, I broke my limits, and I was writing a little bit earlier in the evening, which I don't usually work at that time. But as I was walking through my bedroom, upstairs bedroom, there was a fabulous sunset. And fortunately, I caught it. And we have windows with shutters on them. I opened the windows and just sat there. And, you know, didn't try to take photos, didn't try to take notes, didn't try to do anything. I just sat there and enjoyed it. And that was, you know, moment altering. It reminded me of what we're talking about. This is what we need to be doing. And it was just so
spectacular. Yeah, and I think, and that's actually, you know, conversationally, that's actually more important to me, that story, than, for example, anything you decided with your therapist or anything you did with your business adventures. Although those are fine, I like the first story the best. And I like the verb caught. So why not make that a paradigm shift? What can I catch today that I didn't catch yesterday?
What have you caught in the last couple of days? That have you been surprised by?
Interesting thing about COVID and not being able to get out. I walk every day, you know, several miles. That's out. Now I live in a different town because I'm off of Vashon. But there's 100 acres back here without a home on it, without a house on it that you can walk through. And so, you walk by the geese, and I mean, you just walk, and you find, you're always looking for fun things. And I take pictures sometimes just because the way the light is, et cetera. But I like the way the light comes through windows. I like checking out the moon every night because I'm always curious about that. I like the way the wind sounds.
You know, I was with a friend, you know, a couple of decades ago, and we were on the Pacific coast and in the Laguna area. And it was a rough area of coast. Now it's all private land, but it wasn't private land at the time. And it was rocky and waves beating against the rocks. And it was a cloudy, what do you call it, bursty wind?
A gusty, gusty.
Gusty wind. Sort of pushed you around. And her comment to me, I really like, she didn't say, I like this weather. She says, I like weather. And you know,
that struck me for years.
I like weather. That means she was paying attention, but she was, and maybe it is not exactly paying attention, but it is some kind of openness to receive.
Yeah. It's an availability. I'm available.
I have a handful of, not a handful, just two or three things that I am doing currently that has just really surprised me with joy in my house, that I don't have to leave my house to do it. And I am so enwrapped in awe that it's just amazing. And I'll give you a couple examples. We have to really be careful of the serials and the TV shows we're watching. Some of them I'm finding so disheartening, so filled with violence and cruelty. I hate to use the term, but it really is evil. And I sort of get into the plot, and so we get stuck with watching it, but I find myself emotionally disturbed during it and after it. And so why do I watch it? I don't know. Masochist. But I have found a show. I don't know if you've heard or watched this show. I imagine you have. It's on Amazon Prime. It's titled Mozart in the Jungle. Have you seen that?
No, I haven't.
Oh, Terry, do you get Amazon Prime? Well, you don't have to answer that. But it's it is excellent. It's with Gael García Bernal. Are you familiar with him? He did E Tu Mama Tambien with Diego Lunas. He was
Mozart in the Jungle.
And he is a conductor that just takes over the New York Symphony, and he is more of a prodigy, but a proven prodigy. He's a really sought-after conductor. He's Latin. So Gael is such a charming, witty iconoclast that it is just the way he conducts this orchestra, and the orchestra is a mediocre orchestra, and he's trying to make them into a world-class orchestra. But it is so fun. They're 30 minutes, 26 to 30-minute episodes, four seasons. And it is just, I just can't wait to turn it on because I am so enamored with Rodrigo de Souza, is who he plays. And his character is just so nutty, so crazy. And yet he's a fabulous conductor. It is just...
Oh, no, no, no. I didn't know the name of that show. I've seen that whole show.
Oh.
That's great. Is that where he takes him out, and they play in this one little park? The whole thing goes out by a fence and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, they
well, I like
they, go ahead.
Yeah. I remember that show.
Oh, yeah. It is so worthy. I just found it by accident. But there's shows like that, and another one, Ted Lasso. You know, I think it's helpful to find uplifting shows. You know, we kind of poo-poo the feel-good shows and go for the deep drama. And the deep drama, I'm finding for me, is more destructive than it is enlightening and giving me that sense of awe and wonder. And
mm-hmm.
And
I think the other thing for me in the house is obviously... cooking is significant, making the whole cooking experience significant for me because all your senses are involved. I love that. Plus, there's music in the air. I love that. So, you know, it takes an hour to do all that. I love every bit of that. So,
and that is family,
a part
too.
Of every day. Yeah, of course.
That's an engagement. That's not, you know, you're not by yourself.
Yeah, I mean, it is an engagement. If she helps, sometimes she doesn't. So we need to speak to her about that. This is really important.
My guess is you still do the dishes.
Yeah, and if you know how to stack the dishwasher, that can be a sense of wonder too.
Oh,
amazing thing.
I cannot help my wife in that. She's a front stacker and leaving the back open. And I'm trying to tell her you start from the rear and move your way forward, but she says, nope, I don't think you're ever going to teach me that one. And I said, okay, that's good. But, you know, there are, because we do watch so much television, I just think so much television is destructive. You know how I feel about the news. I think we need to keep informed, but if we watch too much, it is just too depressing. It would help. We don't need to. It would help our souls to do the Mozart in the Jungle and the Ted Lassos and... You know, those just happen to be ones that I've seen recently that are just so, so wonderful, so delightful.
I don't disagree with you. That's something that fills me up but doesn't empty me. I mean, that's all part of the thing too. Is everything about bombardment and distraction empties me rather than fills me up?
Yes, empties you and sort of jades you, don't you think? Don't you think it jades
Yeah,
us?
Because I don't have any capacity to respond. There's no wonder I'm jaded. I'm jagged. I'm edged because there's nothing there to fill the spaces.
Yes, and you're very passionate about these things as well, so that adds to the complexity of it. You know, another thing I found, I know we're TV watchers, and so... Another thing I found on TV that is really, really delightful, and my wife and I have kind of become really fans of it, and that's on YouTube, and that's going to live concerts on YouTube. There is nothing like great live music to impact your life and to impact this sense of, oh, my goodness, that was incredible. And there's a show out there, I don't know if you've heard of it, it's on YouTube called Daryl's House. And it's with Daryl Oates of Hall & Oates. And he has many, many incredible artists that come to his home studio and record live recordings. And it is, the talent blows you away. The music blows you away. And we listen to it two or three times a night for at least 30 minutes, just listening to live music. And it just does our hearts so good. So
absolutely,
good.
As it should.
Yeah, there
100%.
There's just something about live music, even when it's recorded, something about live music that is so much more powerful than just simply CDs or no longer CDs, but streaming.
Mm-hmm.
So what else do you have? Do you have anything else that you do that kind of habitually that sets your mind at ease and... and reminds you of the goodness of life on this planet?
I read every day a book.
You read one book a day, the whole book?
But I read in the book every
day. Scared me. I knew I'm a slow reader. You just made me
feel words are an extraordinary thing because words can take you to those places. Words can invite you to those places where you have been fully alive and grounded and words of wonder. In the same way that music can do the same thing, poetry can do the same thing. That's why Amanda Gorman was so extraordinary.
Extraordinary.
The poet. Yes. Poetry can take you to that other place that may have been, there may have been a bushel over the light, but poetry can take the bushel off the light, you know, and words can do that.
And we don't learn about that in our education, do we?
Because we're reading for the answers to pass the test.
Precisely. And we're reading, and too often we're reading poetry over our head. That it's, you know,
well,
it's not,
because
it's not
we're
really
reading it. We're reading it to try to explain it to someone else rather than just experience it.
Because I'm so with you on poetry. I think we just chatted the other day, is that when I am going to bed at night, I was reading, you know, more, not serious, but, well, more serious nonfiction. And I just said, I'm hitting information overload. I'm just getting too much stuff in my brain. I'm going to set it down, and I'm going to read some poetry by one of my favorite poets, Naomi Shihab Nye, and her famous book, Words Behind the Words. You know, poetry, you can't read fast. You know, you don't read a book of poems really quickly, because it takes me two or three times to read a poem to
see. But that's the other thing about it, is every single one of the things having to do with stuff we talked about today, I wonder, every single thing slows you down. Why? Because it stops you. It pauses you. It reframes you. It resets you. That's the thing about it, is speed has nothing to do with any of the things we've talked about today. You can't do any of the things we've talked about today fast.
Boy, it really comes down to our sense of measuring and creating a checklist in my app, Todoist, and I put read Naomi today, so check. No, it doesn't even make the to-do list.
Right.
It would be a sin to make it to have it make the to-do list.
Yeah, I read Naomi today, and I was going to put her on the checklist, and I got a text from her and said, get me off your checklist.
That, you know, and that sounds like her.
That would be funny, actually. She would do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Terry, this has been so helpful and so enlightening, and I hope our listeners find the same, that they find some, you know, we can find some hope in the solace and the reminder of no matter what the state of the world, there remains awe and wonder, and we get wrapped
Absolutely.
Up in it.
Absolutely.
Hey, Hirsch, thanks so much, buddy.
Thank you, Charles.
I certainly enjoy you being on the show, and this was a fun show today. I also want to thank our listeners for tuning in to The Next Chapter with Charlie, and I would ask you to please be sure to check out our website at thenextchapter.life. It's not .com or .net, it's .life, L-I-F-E, and on that site you will find our weekly blogs and podcasts, and you can, if you wish, you can always subscribe and make it even easier to access either one. So with that said, until next, this is Charlie Hedges signing off. Bye for now.